right. Okay. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm doing this. My name's Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. I'm visiting from Philadelphia. I was asked to speak here about 10 minutes ago. I'm super, super nervous, so please excuse me for that. I'm seeing if there's a clock that I can see anywhere. I'm supposed to speak for 15 minutes. All right. Awesome. Okay. Great. All right. So I'm going to tell you, surprise, surprise, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. All right. So I was born in Illinois in 1988. I'm 25 years old. Just for your information, too, my sobriety date is March 26, 2013. So I have 9 months today, and I'm really excited to be saying that. Thanks. All right. So I was born in Illinois. Moved to Tampa when I was 10. This is where I went to high school. I'm visiting from Philadelphia right now. That's where I went to college for the last 7 or 8 years, on and off. Yeah, I'm on the Van Wilder plan. So anyway, like a lot of people have said, I can relate to this. I always felt like I was different. I always felt like there was something wrong with my family, but it wasn't just my family. Like, my family was this dysfunctional matrix that I was somehow the center of. I was the really unhappy person in the really unhappy system. So yeah, like, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. I remember when we were talking about moving to Tampa, my sister and I were so excited, and my dad was trying his hardest to pump the family up for the move, and I just felt like my mom was dragging her heels, and she was really unhappy that we were coming here, and I was like, why can't you just be happy? You're ruining this for all of us. But yeah, so we moved here. Somehow that unhappiness that I blamed on my mom ended up getting transferred to me. I became very unhappy around 10 or 11, probably because I had trouble fitting in. I remember that my chosen way of trying to fit in when I was in fifth grade, which was the first year that I was here, was to try to copy off of people that I thought were cool, because I didn't have that much of my own identity, you know, like, I saw what other people had, and I wanted to be like them, but I felt like I didn't know how, so all I could really do was copy what they did, but I got caught doing that, and people don't like it when you copy their personality, so I basically got kicked out of my fifth grade group of friends, and I was really, really unhappy about that. You know, I just wanted to quit school, I wanted to be homeschooled, I was like, everyone else doesn't get me. So when I was a kid, I remember feeling like I was different then and separate from everyone, but also somehow better than them. They just didn't understand me. So when I was in sixth grade, you know, we were starting middle school, and I decided that the best way to make everyone else pay and, like, to feel better than everyone else was to retreat into my head and to think constantly about how superior I was to everyone. And, you know, that actually worked for, like, a year. But around seventh or eighth grade, you know, that's when people start caring about being popular. And, you know, I wasn't exempt from that. I cared about that, too. So when puberty happens, when everyone starts caring about the opposite sex, and those feelings of inadequacy, they came flooding right back in. So, you know, that continued into high school. I didn't start drinking until about my junior or senior year of high school. Actually, I remember taking my first drink when I was 14 or 15 before that. I think it was at my cousin's wedding. And I was convinced right off the bat that I had this amazing tolerance. I don't know where I got that idea, but I remember I was having my cousin, buy me shots. Not buy, it was an open bar. So I was having her get me shots from the bar, and I felt really, really cool that I was able to take these shots. And I also remember a different time when I was at home alone, and I was upset over something to do with my friends or a guy or something, and so I made myself a drink, and I, like, wrote in my online journal, I come up with the best solutions to problems in the world with, like, messed up typing and everything. I was being really melodramatic. So that gives you an idea of how I viewed drinking. It really wasn't, like, necessarily a healthy way to view drinking from the beginning, and no one else gave me that idea. No one else, like, told me that drinking was for that. My family are normal drinkers. My dad is what I would describe as a workaholic, and I would say that it affected me and my family, but at the same time, the idea that I had about alcohol was a very healthy idea. I mean, the idea I was given about alcohol was a healthy idea, but the idea that I had in my mind about it was not, and I don't know where that came from. So around 16 or 17 in high school, I got really depressed. And, you know, I sort of tried asking for help, but I really didn't know how. So my way of dealing with that problem, I was always into external solutions to internal problems. I went and I was always a perfectionist. You know, it really, really mattered to me, getting straight A's all the time. My grades had started slipping a little bit. And so I decided that I had ADD. I decided this on my own. I got my parents to take me to the doctor, and I got a prescription. So, you know, like, my whole thing, starting in high school, prescription drugs and alcohol. It got really serious around 17. By the time I was 18, I don't know if any of you guys go to Ybor, but I got taken away from the club Prana in an ambulance when I was 18. I thought that it was my friend's fault. I thought that they were talking to guys and someone slipped something in my drink. I didn't think about the Jack Daniels that I was chugging the entire way to the club. You know, things were not going well right from the beginning. I was never one of those people who didn't get in trouble and who got away with things. I always, always got in trouble, and it was so unfair. Obviously that night that I got taken to the hospital did not end well for me. There were serious consequences for it. And I basically spent most of the summer after my senior year of high school grounded, you know, like not really getting to go out. All of my new friends that I had made, because I was this party girl now, were like, you know, they were out of the picture. So I was convinced I was going to get a new start in college. I'll try to make this part brief because, you know, like I said, I was in college for 7 or 8 years on and off. Basically, I crashed and burned as soon as I got there my freshman year. I was going to this really fancy school that I thought would, like, solve all of my problems because I would be a graduate of the school and, like, everyone would know how great and important I was finally. It just did not work out that way for me. I got there, you know, like, I didn't do my homework. I barely came to my dorm room. I, like, would come in at 5 in the morning. I would be gone for 3 days at a time. My RA was super concerned about me. And my roommate moved out at the beginning of winter semester, and I was, like, shocked. I was like, why would you want to not live with me? Like, I'm awesome. And she was like, it's not you, it's me. But, you know, it was definitely me. I did a whole lot of drinking. I did a whole lot of, at that point, I was still sort of just on the prescription drugs. You know, when one wasn't available, I did the other. But I started doing them all at once, definitely early on. You know, I wouldn't say, I had this idea that I didn't black out because my tolerance was too high, despite the incident when I was 18, when I obviously blacked out. But I immediately, like, it was around January of freshman year, I started blacking out, and just immediately after that, I started blacking out all the time. Like, 1 week I blacked out 4 times, and one of those nights I lost about 5 hours. Things happened that I was shocked to hear about. And, you know, like, it stopped being quite as funny. And there was just one night where, in a blackout, I did some stuff that was just shameful and embarrassing for me. I was failing out of my classes. And I was in so much, my life was so unmanageable that it was just insane. It was, like, not something that I felt like I could clean up. I felt like I just had to start over. So that was the first time I came back here to Tampa. I'm not going to go over every single time I went back and forth. There were several. A few of them went that same way. Freshman year was a little bit different in that I still was able to pretend that I was doing the same thing that other people were doing. I went out to frat parties. You know, I, like, actually hung out with people. And granted, like, they were sort of on to me and what I was doing. But gradually throughout the years, things changed. Like, I didn't have those friends anymore. I didn't have parties to go out to. You know, like, my world just got smaller and smaller and smaller. I came back to Tampa a few different times. The times that I was in Tampa were the times that I was trying to make my life more manageable. But, you know, I was trying to do it all by myself. There was one time I was living in an apartment in Wesley Chapel. I had covered all of the... I had a porch that I smoked cigarettes on. I had covered all of the screens with trash bags, and I just sat out there all night not sleeping, and that was what I did. And I lived alone there for about a year. I went back after that to school. I'm not really sure why. My life got more and more depressing, smaller and smaller, more and more isolated. That porch was a good metaphor for, like, what I was going through spiritually and emotionally, and I just thought that I had to be tough, you know, like, I thought that I felt like I couldn't acknowledge what I was actually going through because I had no solution. So cutting to what happened and what it's like now, one thing I've mentioned I always used external means to try to mediate what's happening internally, and one of those, you know, I did everything that I did alcoholically. I did drugs alcoholically, I obviously drank alcoholically, I conducted my relationships alcoholically, and Relationships are one thing that helped bring me to my knees, so I'm thankful for that. You know, I was in one of them. I rebounded off of one relationship to another, and I was in one that was just an absolute mess, and this person told me for the first time ever, you have a drinking problem. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm only drunk 95% of the time, and you drink too, and the other 5% of the time I'm not drunk, and I'm just going through a hard time right now. And he was like, you really, really need to get, you know, you need to get it together. But I didn't. So that person walked out on me. I realized that I was left completely alone, and I started looking up what alcoholism is on the internet. And I came up with the idea that I might try going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's when I came in this fellowship. My first meeting was October 12th, 2012. You know, I got a sponsor within about a month. That wasn't the end of my career of alcohol and drug use. That didn't happen until last March. But I can say on March 25th, I had a true first step experience. I don't really have time to go through my experience with all the steps. But I can go through, I think I really wanted to say something about sponsorship because I owe a lot to my sponsor. I think that she showed me, besides my first step experience and, you know, coming in here in the first place, my relationship with my sponsor is something that helped show me, like, what a relationship with, like, what a fledgling relationship with a higher power can look like. My sponsor doesn't, you know, she doesn't push me. She doesn't ever tell me what to do. When I ask for advice, she gives it to me. But it's sort of like, it's a good analogy to my higher power for me because she has never once called me when I don't call her. But when I call her, she answers the phone. She's told me before, I was like, why don't you always answer the phone? And she's like, I have a light, but if you leave a voicemail, I'll respond to it. She taught me to leave people voicemails. She taught me to call people when you need their support. My relationship with her is like my relationship with God in that she is there for me whether or not I go to her, but when I go to her, it makes things that much easier. My relationship with my sponsor continues to be very important to me. My relationship with my higher power is a little bit less tangible and a little bit more difficult for me to explain to anyone, but I think that's okay. Developing very slowly, definitely developed as I've gone through the steps. You know, 1, 2, and 3 were very important to me. 4, 5, and 6 were interesting. Step 4 was some of the first real work I did. I got a job while I was doing my fourth step, and it was my first job that I've had in my life. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, like, the experiences ran in parallel, my fourth step and my first job. They taught me a lot. They taught me the meaning of, like, I wouldn't say I know the meaning of hard work, but, you know, persistence is important. Showing up every day is important. Sitting and continuing my fourth step, even though it seems like an endless mountain, was really, really important. Because when I got to the end, sat my sponsor, did my fifth step, it was an immensely rewarding experience. I kind of think that I'm not quite through with 6 and 7. They're an ongoing process for me. I was shocked to find out that my character defect didn't just start, like, melting away immediately. Like, my life was run by fear and anxiety before I came into this program, and while my anxieties have started abating, they haven't gone away completely, and some of my fears and phobias remain, and I was just so angry about this the other day, and I was talking to my sponsor about it, and she's like, you know what, maybe it's not always up to you when these things are removed. Like, you can do the next right thing, and you can ask for guidance, but you aren't in control of when these things are lifted from you, and some of them may not be for a long time. So, you know, working on acceptance is something that I continue to do on a day-to-day basis. I'm on my 8th step right now. I'm going through my list slowly. It remains to be seen who I will and will not be giving an amends to, but that's, you know, what my sponsor is for. Well, she's for a lot of things, but that's one thing that she's for. And I guess I'll close by saying I am just like my higher power continues to provide exactly what I need at any given moment. I'm so thankful that I was asked to speak today, and I really hope, well, like, before I got up here, I almost forgot to pray, which is, you know, typical of me and one of the most important things. But, you know, I just ask that God would allow me to, like, you know, speak his/her truth, because I don't really like to give my power a gender. But I hope that I have been able to, like, reach someone today, and that anything I said, you know, has resonated with anyone. If you're new, you know, I think that this cliche, but keep coming back, is really what worked for me. This is changing my life one day at a time, and it's really been worth it. So thank you.